activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
We interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object battling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Thursday, June 19th, 2014. Welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Alien Invasion number 108 in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. I'm Dave Nelson. Joining me as always, my awesome, super duper, terrific co-hosts, Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens in Wausau, Wisconsin. What's up, guys?
Howdy.
Not much, yo.
Okay. For the people that are watching us, you will enjoy Anessa's crown of some sort using the crazy Google Hangouts app called What Draw?
Yeah, and they have stamps, and I think these are supposed to be feathers.
Oh, they are feathers. Yeah, you're right.
So I just stuck them on my head because it seemed like the thing to do.
Okay. This is another reason why you guys should be watching the show on YouTube as well. YouTube.com/... Galactic Netcast for all the visible shenanigans.
You can watch me be a dork.
Yeah. So how you guys doing? How was your week?
That was pretty good. Well, you know, we're on kind of it's Thursday. Everything's kind of thrown off because we swapped days for doing the show. We saw How to Train Your Dragon 2 last night.
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh, it was so good.
I hear it. Yeah. I hear that it's excellent.
I really enjoyed it. I even cried. So.
And now Anessa's wearing a Viking helmet.
Yeah. Last week Thursday we saw a double feature of Maleficent and Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh my god, two movies in a row. Holy crap.
Back.
We had like a 25-30 minute break where we ran to Arby's and scarfed down a sandwich and went back.
And I'm guessing that Edge of Tomorrow is going to be your pick this week, right?
Yes.
Okay. I saw it too. Stephanie and I saw it as well, so we can all just jump in on the conversation.
We can all pitch in and talk about it.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, oh, it was great.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. All right, let's actually officially start the show. This is the podcast where we do talk about aliens, the extraterrestrial kind, and their appearances all over the damn place. Film, like Edge of Tomorrow, TV, video games, comic books, science, and in real life. And we break down the show into three sections, the news, the craft corner, that's the spotlight of a certain particular kind of alien spacecraft, and our picks for the week, which we already mentioned real quick. If you want to watch us live, we record the show most Wednesdays, this week Thursdays, however. Just follow us on Google+, Facebook, and Twitter, and we'll be posting the link as to where you can watch us, or after the fact at youtube.com/galacticnetcasts. And while we're plugging stuff, let's talk about Patreon. Patreon.com/galacticnetcast. You can invest in the show with only a single dollar. Well, we prefer more, but a dollar a month would be good enough. And that will be taken out of your whatever account you set it up with automatically. And that will help support us and make us the biggest, the baddest, the most awesomest, science fiction podcasting network on the damn internet. So again, Patreon. patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. Let's get the show on the road.
In the news.
All right. Are you guys big Avatar fans?
Yeah, I enjoyed the first film.
Oh, I was going to clarify. I'm not talking like a visible representation of yourself.
Or The Last Airbender.
Yes. That either. We're talking the James Cameron film that came out, what, 2009? Has it been that long?
Yeah. Yes.
Holy crap.
2009, 2010.
Okay.
Well, I guess it would have been 2009 because I remember we were talking about it when I started working full-time in 2010.
Okay.
No, I enjoyed the movie. So.
Well, we've got a lot more Avatar action coming our way in the next 20 years.
Oh, Christ, I don't know if I liked it that much.
So James Cameron and Fox Pictures are going all in on Avatar. Three sequels being written as we speak. Apparently the screenplays will be turned in to the studio this week or in the next few weeks or so. And they're going all in. They've got a plan. They planned it out through the next 20 years. Starting in 2016, they'll be releasing a movie every December beginning in 2016 for three movies in a row. And then there's a lot more than that involved as well. Apparently, they've got all kinds of cool things planned. Like, there's already an arrangement with, what is it? The Blue Man, not Blue Man Group. See, I was...
Although, it would totally work. They would blend right in.
Yeah, exactly. Because those creatures were blue, right?
Yeah, yes. They were blue.
The so. Naveen?
Yeah, the Naveen. the Blue Man Group, blue people will have to get long tails, and that's about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, they're, James Cameron's in talks with Cirque du Soleil to do an Avatar version of Cirque du Soleil. Is that how I pronounce it?
Cirque du Soleil?
Oh, Cirque du Soleil. Okay. I should be better with my French by now. But I'm not.
Well, you don't live in Quebec, so.
Yeah. There, but there's, Anessa, there's still French all over the place.
But it's not as heavy.
Yeah, that's true. So here's what's going on with the sequels. According to an article in the New York Times, Fox, as well as Cameron's production company, Lightstorm Entertainment, are expected to release the three successive Avatar films set for release the next three straight, not the next three, but three Decembers in a row starting in 2016 to transform their companies and possibly once again to set a new standard for large-scale multimedia entertainment. So they're thinking outside the theater. They're thinking what could possibly be our mode of taking in movies in, let's say, 2025. I think they're really thinking ahead technology-wise because James Cameron was really on the forefront of 3D because that was really the first 3D movie I remember seeing after the resurgence, after it started up again, right?
Yes, that was the big showpiece mm-hmm. to show how cool 3D could be.
And I think they're thinking what's the next thing they can do to kind of the next piece of technology that they can introduce into film entertainment. So I'm interested to see what they come up with, along with the Cirque du Soleil I mentioned earlier. They're also working on a Avatar-themed Disney Animal Kingdom in Orlando by 2017. You'll be able to actually experience Pandora, and that'll be in year two, the second sequel will be released that year. It'll be between the first and second sequel of the film. And keep in mind, too, they're also investing in sets around the world for this. They're going to film all three movies in a row. So lots of money being doled out, and it looks like Fox will have a bigger chunk of the pie this time around, too, because they don't want to miss out on that big $2.8 billion worldwide ticket sales that the first one made. But do you guys think that the sequels will make just as much money as the original? I have my doubts.
Maybe the next one, but after that, I don't think so.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think it really depends on the story and how well they take care of it and how well they, you know, like if people are watching the video now, they should be seeing the Avatar themed area that they're scheduling for 2017 in Disney's Animal Kingdom in Florida. And it looks spectacular. If they have enough, I think, things built around it to kind of keep that excitement going, to keep that interest going, maybe. But again, that really kind of requires excellent writing to keep the interest going.
And the entertainment aspect as well, not just the story, right? Because like I said, James Cameron, famous for kind of stepping it up a little bit and introducing new technologies to movie going. So even if the story kind of sucks a little bit, as long as they have something new to experience the movie with, and it's something that people would want to experience firsthand, then they got another winner on their hands, or winners, I guess.
No, true that.
So, whether you like it or not, we have a whole crap ton of Avatar coming our way in the next 20 years.
Is that a metric crap ton? Or...
Yes. In this case, it is a metric crap ton of Avatar.
It's an unobtainium amount.
Yeah. So how do you guys feel of these big movie franchises like the Star Wars franchise? They're going to make a bunch of movies in a row. Marvel, of course, working on their cinematic universe, and now DC and Warner Brothers, they've got all their movies planned out for the next freaking 20 years or so. How do you guys feel about this? Do you think it's a mistake that they kind of putting all their stuff into one pile or not?
I kind of think that maybe they should shorten the duration to maybe 5 or 10 years just in case they end up doing a few flops and, you know, it's a lot of commitment.
Yeah, and
it really is.
Yeah, and
but
like I said,
a shorter amount of time I think would be fine. Like, let's look at the next 3 or 4 movies that we're going to make and then go from there if they're that ambitious. Okay, let's look at the next 4 or whatever the number is that they decide. But when you start looking at it like 20 years, it just, a lot can happen. You never really know how it's going to work out.
But you have to think of it this way as well. Coming from a TV perspective, beginning with Star Trek The Next Generation, that was about 20 years of Star Trek on TV, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, most of these TV shows that get started don't think they're going to last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're happy if they last, you know, like 2 or 3 or more.
Well, and they're happy if they hit 5.
Yeah, and I mean, once they hit 10, they're like, holy crap, we've been on the air for 10 years. It's not something that was planned.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that happens because they managed to survive. Whereas with movies, you're pretty much committed, at least when you're first going in, to trying to produce something over the next 20 years, whereas TV shows, you go in not knowing if they're going to pick up the pilot. If they do pick up the first season, you never know if they're going to do the second. If it ends up being really good, it could go on for 4 or 5 seasons, and then people could lose interest and be like, meh, and the TV show would end up getting canceled. So, I mean...
Especially with Cameron, they're going to be filming all 3 movies at the same time. So that's an even bigger commitment, right?
Yeah.
It is a bigger commitment, but doing them all at the same time, while I'm sure it's going to be really taxing on everyone involved, at the same time, you don't have to really worry too much about, like, the actors getting really old, because the other thing, too, is if you're going to keep some of the same characters on, and say you have a character that isn't really supposed to age all that much, it's kind of hard to keep that same actor looking about the same for 20 years.
That's why it would make sense
that you would want to do it all simultaneously.
And that's why they've done it with...
Currently, I should say, not simultaneously.
Yeah, that's why they've done it with the... what's the Katniss movies?
Oh, yeah.
Hunger Games? Yeah, that's why they've done it with...
Yeah, because, I mean, if you look at... Even looking at Harry Potter, of course, you know, they're supposed to be growing up, but just how much they change in just such a short amount of time,
mm-hmm.
age-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some people age faster than others, too.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so we'll see what happens. We'll see if this all pans out for James Cameron and the gang with the Avatar sequels. Let's move on to the second story of the episode. And Inessa, what do you got?
Sorry, I was drinking water. What do I have? Oh, I actually have a story from the Weekly World News. And, shocker, it does not involve the Gutens
oh.
or the Zeebuns.
Oh, I'm disappointed. Why?
What?
Weekly World News, what's going
it's
on?
It's crazy. But I was so happy to see that the Weekly World News isn't asleep. So apparently, Boca Raton, Florida, scientists at the Center for Financial Opportunism and Piracy, also known as CFOP, enclosed shocking research findings here that could amuse global financial markets while likely easing much Main Street head scratching, whatever that means. A 12-month intensive CFOP team surveillance project discovered a family of four avaricious aliens had taken up residence in the cranium of a, well, they'd taken up residence in the cranium and were largely controlling the functioning of a Tier 2 Wall Street activist's brain.
What? Back up the bus, please. Can you slow it down and explain that a little bit?
Okay.
I don't know. I'm confused.
So, yeah, the way the story is written is really weird, but essentially you have this guy that works on Wall Street. He's a big shot. And apparently he's had this family of four living in his head.
Physically living in his head.
Physically living in his head. They've since this discovery, because apparently his actions had like dramatically changed and he had become a big jerk because of these aliens. It's so bizarre. So, anyway, they've removed these little aliens, and I should probably have brought up a picture of them, but they're cute, and they're little, and they're blue.
They're shrunken.
They look like little grays, just with slightly blue.
They're shrunken down Navi.
Yeah. So the beings have been excised from Greg's brain. Apparently his name's Greg. And he is resting comfortably on his hedge fund partner's 115-foot yacht. The aliens themselves hail from Gecko Antar, which is a tiny planet in the shadows of the larger and better-known planets, Akman Loeb and Ikan. I've never heard of those. I don't know how they're better-known. Better-known than what? I don't know. Gecko Antar is populated by opportunistic, win-at-all-costs little beings breathing a rare mixture of hubris and omniscience and feeding on public attention. Little is known publicly about these rarely sighted creatures other than reputed previous Homo sapiens brain infiltrations with similar reality-bending, avarice-focused actions launched at safe distance from where the real work is done. And it's funny because there was like a little blurb in this article that says that CFOP files from their, I guess, other investigations of other higher up people, creatures from the planet Gecko Antar following exition from the hedge fund manager's brain. It says rumors of a prior sojourn that disrupted hair follicles of Donald Trump are still uncorroborated, but sort of makes sense when you think about it.
Okay, if there's anybody in the whole world that I would think would have aliens in his head, it would be Donald Trump.
It would be Donald Trump.
It would be. But, yeah, essentially there are little beings that can take hold of your brain and make you become a really big jerk. And, like, one director at one of the companies that the guy interacted with said, thank God he's safe. He was really starting to piss us off, walking in and telling us how to run our business with zero relevant experience, far less skin in the game, and some ill-conceived concepts that are clearly non-starters to anyone knowing the dynamics of our business. This really brings clarity into the insanity we had assumed.
I love how the one thing they're worried about is the business aspect of things, not his, like, health or the fact that there's aliens living inside his head.
I know. They're like, thank God he's back to normal because he was starting to ruin our business. Jerk. So, and Wet Seal CEO Keith Stewart, who had been directly in the crosshairs of the alien-influenced propaganda attacks, commented, most of all, I'm really happy for his family. They get to have their daddy back. We are saddened by the imagined pain of alien-infused report card, piano recital, or soccer practice critiques. But it's over now, and we're going to send him our biggest Invicta wristwatch as an olive branch slash token of our sympathies. The board has assumed free shipping and 6 value pay installments, so it'll be easy on his pocketbook. Keep him on time and remind him to shop with us each and every day.
Maybe I missed it, but did you mention in the story if the aliens survived, or did they die in the surgical procedure?
They showed them in little boxes, so I don't know if they kept them for experiments, or what the deal was. They didn't really say. This story was a little bit on the redundant side, so I cut some of it out. It might have been in some of that, but...
I'm proud of the Weekly World News for getting off the Gutan and the Zeebon bandwagon and moving on to the next kind of aliens. I'm waiting for the follow-up story to these guys.
I know. I wonder who they're going to infest next, like whose head.
I lay odds on President Obama.
Oh, I'm sure somebody's already made that remark that's read this story or that's listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
So if not him, then I don't know. I'm sure some other political figure.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So
interesting stuff.
Maybe Putin. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I was really surprised to see the story, and it didn't involve the Gutans or the Zeebons.
All right. Did you do a traditional like Google search for alien invasion, or did you actually go on to the Weekly World News site?
Oh, I've been going on to the Weekly World News site each week just to see if they post anything new.
Because they have a whole alien section, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. But it hasn't really been anything new beyond like the alien balls in Mexico.
Yeah, that was a while ago, too.
Yeah, that was a while ago. And they like reposted the story like it was fresh news. I'm like, psh, we talked about that last year.
I know, it's old news.
So, yeah, I'm really glad that they've found some new stuff out there for us to talk about.
Hopefully we'll see more of this, more of it coming from the Weekly World News.
Yep.
The one thing
we don't really have a name of the aliens, just that they hail from Gecko Antar.
The next story, they will have a name, and then they will have the UN investigator, as they always. I'm surprised that there wasn't some kind of UN investigator in this or in this story that you read.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised about that too. It just focused all about Wall Street and big time executives, which is bizarre.
That's funny.
Last place I would expect people to investigate UFOs or aliens, but whatever. So, and I think Brad had them up on his screen briefly.
Yeah.
I did.
Blue, cartoonish looking people. Big heads, big craniums. They were kind of cute.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
I didn't see the picture of them actually in boxes, though. Was that in the story as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. It looked like they were in toy boxes.
Yeah, that's the other thing about this story that I don't...
Toy boxes, really?
here's,
it looks like you went to the store and just
the family
a
that was
dolls.
Inside of his head, and those look like shoe boxes.
Not real.
There's no room for that in a person's head.
No.
There isn't.
They scrunched themselves down in the fetal position.
And they're fully clothed.
Yeah, fully clothed family of four aliens that size living in a man's head.
Yeah. Yeah. Not possible. That did not happen.
That ain't right.
Yeah.
No.
All right. Thank you, Nessa. Let's move on to third and final story of the episode. It's Brad. What do you got?
So, we're going to start with the headline. This is from the HuffPo. I just love saying the
HuffPost. Oh, my God.
Huffington Post.
We went from Weekly World News to the Huffington Post. That's awesome.
I know. The headline is, "The Truth Behind the Malibu Underwater Alien Base," in quotes.
I've been wondering about that my whole life.
So this whole thing kind of started on the radio program Fade to Black. It's a show in California, and basically somebody had called in stating that they knew the truth about this underwater alien facility where alien UFOs could land and be out of sight. You wouldn't be able to see the spacecraft because they'd be underwater. So they decided to, using Google Earth, find this spot and then from all the different angles try to come up with an overall view. Now this is an oval-shaped object. It's got a huge flat top or almost slightly domed, and it looks like there's pillars or columns underneath this thing. Now the anomaly, as they say in here for the moment, is approximately 2,000 feet below the surface of the water, and it measures 3 miles wide. So it's not just like right under the water. It's 2,000 feet below the water. And this is off the coast of Point Doom in Malibu, California. Now, researchers have been looking for this holy grail of UFO landing sites for 40 years, and now they say that they've found it. This is proof that there's an alien landing facility off the coast of California there in Malibu. Now they want to actually send or get information from there, like to get information like pictures of a dive going down to that area and actually checking it out.
James Cameron.
Absolutely. After Titanic, he's your guy. And we're going to post a link in the show notes where you can actually go to the Google Earth coordinates and actually see this thing that we're talking about. Although, right now, I am going to...
I'm on pins and needles, Brad. Can't.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. I'm going to blow this up here so we can people actually viewing our show can see this. You'll have to excuse. This is on the HuffPo site, so there's scantily clad women for another story off to the side in World Cup soccer. But here it is. So this green spot up here is like above the water land mass. And here's this oval shape with the pillars that we're talking about that supposedly is the artificial landing space for these alien craft that is 2,000 feet below the water. If this is 2,000 feet, this thing must be like hundreds of feet thick.
Jeez, yeah.
And then your columns here are hundreds of feet tall. Wow. That would be such a huge mega structure.
Yeah. Wow.
And then looking off to the left-hand side, you can kind of see that there have been slides. Like this might have been softer. Or maybe there was a volcano in this area where it kind of flowed down and around a little bit here.
So this so the base must have been there or has been there for a long time.
Yeah, possibly.
Hmm.
So, very, very interesting. And this is 6 miles off the coast, just to be a little bit more clear of Point Doom. So it's 6 miles out, 2,000 feet down.
So, I'm guessing there's going to be a few scuba divers that are going to try to figure out.
Well, 2,000 feet.
2,000 feet, you can't really dive.
Yeah, not you would need some not kind of submersible equipment craft to get you down that far.
Well, some Absolutely. Crazy person with a submarine.
Yeah. James Cameron.
Yeah. Wasn't he the one that live-streamed or recorded, videotaped them going into the Marianas Trench or some really, really deep place in the ocean just within the last couple of years? It was James Cameron, wasn't it? I thought.
Probably. Yeah, I think maybe he did, especially after all the work that he did with the Titanic. I mean, they did go down and actually film the Titanic, so
yeah,
that would make a lot of sense.
They developed a lot of technology just from that what's the word I'm looking for? From that adventure? That's not the right word. From excursion? No, that's not it either.
Expedition,
thank you. From trying to get to the Titanic site and all that great footage, I believe that they actually developed technology for deep submersible exploration of the ocean floor, I believe.
Yeah.
All right, cool. I'm looking forward to meeting our new aliens, alien friends, on the ocean floor. Pretty cool stuff. Final thoughts on those stories? Any of the stories?
I'm kind of wondering how long it's going to take before somebody goes down there to check that out.
Yeah. And then somebody's going to die, and they're going to blame somebody on it.
Your fault for pointing me in this direction. Or for pointing whoever died in that direction.
Yep. All right. So, before we move on to the craft corner, we would love to know your thoughts on the stories that we've talked about tonight or on any of our episodes from the past. And you can do that by reaching out to us via email, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com, galacticnetcasts@gmail.com. Our voicemail number is always open, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. It is 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. And we would love to hear from you. In fact, somebody called our voicemail this week and left a message. We're going to find out who that was and what they had to say at the end of the show. So,
woo-hoo!
Let's move on to this.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape. Huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a zone. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was circular in disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
All right. It's time for Craft Corner, our look at a famous alien craft in the history of UFO investigations, or fiction, which we haven't even touched on yet. Anessa, you were assigned this week's Craft Corner craft. What do you got for us?
I have rectangular shaped.
We are running out of shapes.
Next going to be octagon and decagon and no. Rectangular. Well, the reason why I brought this one up is because when searching for a story last week, I actually came across a story that talked about a rectangular shaped UFO. So this week I decided to see if I could find any more. And they did. Unfortunately, there's not like a Wikipedia page or anything, but I did look at a couple of descriptions from eyewitness accounts. And both of them are really recent too, like this month, this year.
Whoa.
So yeah. One person in Arizona back on the 13th said he was outside feeding farm animals and describes the aircraft as flying so low and it was so strange looking. It looked like a large rectangle about 30 feet, and I'm not sure, maybe 4 or 5 feet wide. It had two large white pulsating lights about the size of the old car headlights, and they were round. The lights were centered about one-third up from the ends of the rectangle. The strange thing was that the back of the UFO also had the same light, the same huge white pulsating lights on the back of its side as it was flying away. And someone in New York, on the other side of America, was talking about how they saw three orange glowing lights in a rectangle form and was moving very slow. I watched in disbelief, and I was, to be honest, very afraid. The object then hovered near the witness's home for about 4 to 5 minutes until its lights went out suddenly. The lights disappeared like someone was hitting the switch. The witness stated that an object with the same description appeared over her previous farmhouse less than 2 years ago and that her husband saw the object for her with her then.
Yeah, she better look for the implant in the back of her head.
I know, and she needs to look to see if she's lost any time.
Yeah.
So... yeah, it's a couple of descriptions. It just seems if you do a search for rectangle UFOs, you'll come across a lot of different sightings and a lot of different stories. But I did come across this interesting website. I don't know if you guys have come across this yet or not. It's called the National UFO Reporting Center Report Index for Craft Shape and then it's got rectangle.
Oh. Whoa. And we're going to have to revisit that.
Oh, wow,
that.
No.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it has different cities and and states. It talks about the shape, how long the sighting was. It's got the summary. So if you click on the date and time, it'll actually come up with the complete description. So we've got a lot of fairly recent sightings of rectangular UFOs. You've got Bullhead City, Arizona, posted on June 13th. Calgary, Canada, same day. Tempe, Arizona, same day. Kennewick, Washington, June 6th. Atwater, California, June 6th. So, and these, I've noticed the duration of viewing has ranged anywhere from 5 seconds to 2 to 3 minutes, even 5 minutes in some cases.
Yep.
15 minutes in Memphis. So.
Are most of these at night?
I would say probably. They don't really say much in the summary unless you click on the link.
Yeah, you have to go into the link.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
One person said, hoax? It was terrific. And this was in India. It says, it was terrific. Rectangular-shaped flying object with green light with no sound. The rectangle object is silver in color after 20 seconds suddenly disappeared from the sky.
Huh.
And they're like, was it a hoax? It was terrific. So.
It was a terrific hoax.
It was terrific. So, actually, I don't know if the hoax was from the people who keep track of these reports or if it's from the person who said it was terrific, which I think it might just be a language.
That could be, yeah. It's interesting because I think these guys that take these reports down, I think they've got certain criteria to kind of weed out the hoaxes. So that could be it. That could be the reason why it says hoax is because I think they require certain specifications of a sighting from people that report.
Possibly, or maybe just the fact that they said that it was fantastic. And like I said, language could be a different thing too. And they might have included it just because it was from India and thought, well, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But just with caution. But a lot of them, they've got two rectangular bright white lights and a square light on the right. It disappeared. Another one, five fire-like lights seen slowly traveling northbound in the sky in a rectangular shape. But apparently this one changed shape. So I don't know what's up with that one.
It had to change shape for reasons of flight configuration, maybe. Interesting.
Maybe. I've noticed a couple of these have five lights.
Huh.
It varies between three lights and five lights that they see that are in this rectangular shape. So I wonder if maybe there are two different types of rectangular spacecraft.
It could be, yeah. Maybe multi-layers. Maybe there's, because I'm thinking, I was just wondering where the five lights would be, because the triangle has 3 points, right? One, two, three.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking if they're rectangular, then maybe just all in a row or on each corner and one in the middle.
That's possible, yeah.
So it's hard to say, but yeah, it seems like 3 to 5 lights is the average or more popular. There's one that has 10 to 12 lights.
Holy crap.
So maybe it was a couple of ships flying next to each other and they just counted them all. I don't know.
What I'm curious about is the people that see these at night, are they like directly below them? And if so, when they look up, does it block the stars? Does it block the sky, the night sky? Can they tell it's a solid object?
It depends on how big it is. I mean, if it's 30 feet wide and 30 feet long, 5 feet wide, depending on how high up it is, it would block at least part of the stars. But
yeah,
the lights might blind you from seeing some of the stars, depending on their brightness.
Good point. Yeah.
But it wouldn't block everything out unless it was just right on top of you.
Mm-hmm.
And by that point, you would probably crap your pants.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. So. Cool. Hey, I have a question. When you were looking on that site and the categories, did you notice other shapes that we haven't touched on yet, Anessa?
I have not. I only had a chance to really look at the rectangle shapes because I was looking for a couple of other descriptions as well. So I was like, huh, this is interesting. But, Yeah, if you, I don't know. I'm sure they have other shapes. I just need to actually go in there and look.
We are running out of the standard shapes.
We are.
I can't think of any more that we would really be able to classify as a shape. I don't know.
So, I don't know. Next is going to be a line spacecraft. Just a straight line, not even rectangular.
Oh, I thought you said lion. I'm like, Voltron?
It's in the shape of a lion. It's the constellation of Leo that everybody confuses for spacecraft.
All right, cool. All right, so that's your craft corner. Thank you very much, Anessa. You guys ready for picks?
Yes.
I think how I want to do this is I want to do mine first. I know, Brad, you're... Oh, wait a second. I thought you guys were just going to talk about Edge of Tomorrow together. I didn't know that Brad had a separate pick. Okay.
We decided to do separate picks.
Okay. Let's go in order then. Brad, what is your pick? What did you? What do you want to talk about?
Well, my pick is actually a new show from Felicia Day's Geek and Sundry line that she has an agreement through Hulu for her show called Spooked, which is a comedy series that follows a team of paranormal investigators, the Paranormal Investigative Team, or PIT. So it's an unfortunate name, which becomes a sort of a running gag through the show.
Do they have black T-shirts with white lettering that says PITs on it?
No.
But they do have like a little logo that has the name in a circle.
Yeah.
And I think it does actually say PIT somewhere on it.
Yeah, it does. P.I.T. Yep. Some of the cast are actually known to us. Ashley Johnson plays a character named Morgan, and she is the Wiccan of the group. So she kind of covers more of the spiritual investigations, as it were, doing readings, seances, and so on and so forth. And Neil Grayston, who we know as, Ashley Johnson also was the littlest Seaver in Growing Pains.
Oh, okay.
She was a child actress. And then she's done the voice of Gwen Tennyson from Ben 10 for quite some time. And she was in the Avengers film as the waitress that talks to Captain America at the beginning of the film.
Okay.
So she's had a number of other appearances, and that's where you would recognize her from. Neil Grayston, who we know from as Fargo from Eureka.
Oh, love that guy!
Sci-fi show.
Love that guy.
Yeah, and he's been in other things too. But that's one of his trade things. If you know Neil Grayston, you know that he was in Eureka. And Neil Grayston plays a character who funds the PIT team. And we're not exactly sure if he's just how he's independently wealthy. They haven't really talked about his backstory at all, which is...
Not yet. Aside from he has money and he sucks at remembering to take the lens cap off the camera.
That's kind of important.
That's about all
we know. That's important
when
you do that kind of thing.
Yeah, we know Lindsay can't swim. We know that Lindsay has, basically he has purchased all of the high-tech equipment. In the most recent episode, he had a Gauss meter, which measures magnetic fields. But in this particular episode, which is episode 2, which is called Mixed Signal. Now, we're an alien show, right? So why would I be talking about a paranormal, like ghost-type investigation show if this didn't have something to do with aliens? So the team is called to a place. We're not exactly sure where, but it has a down south or redneck kind of a feel to it, and there's been an abduction. There's actually been two abductions. The most recent abduction of the family dog is the bridge too far, and the reason why the PIT team is called to investigate. The different characters are really very interesting and horribly quirky. Actually, by horribly, I mean wonderfully. Watching their dysfunctional activities together and how they work as a team is phenomenal. And the writing of the show actually takes you to strange places. Like, you're kind of wondering, especially in this episode, why a team that seems to investigate more ghostly appearances would end up in an investigation like this. And it takes an interesting twist at the end, which I really don't want to give away. But it has such a wonderfully quirky sense of humor. And in the show notes, we're going to have a link to Hulu where this is available. Episode 3 is the current episode that is out, at least at the time of that we're doing this. But we'll have a link to the episode in question, episode 2, Mixed Signal, for you to check out. So
sounds good.
I highly recommend it. I know on S and I, it's a weekly thing that we definitely sit down and we watch. So
yeah,
I'm going to have to crank up the old VPN on the Chrome browser and trick it that I'm in the States and watch it. That's how I watch my Hulu.
You hacker. You.
Yes, I'm in New York, really.
Yep. Although, I will say that I think that it's available on YouTube, because I did see Neil Grayston initially post a link to YouTube for the episode.
Oh, that would make sense because of the Geek and Sundry channel on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So you don't have to hack. You should be able to just go to YouTube and watch it there.
I will check it out. All right. Thank you, Brad. I have an idea. Anessa, do you mind if I switch with you and then we'll leave Edge of Tomorrow to the end? That will give us kind of more time. If we're running short on time, then we know when we can wrap it up. Are you cool with that?
No! Just kidding. I'm fine.
Okay. My pick.
Go ahead, Dave.
Okay. Can I button line here? Do you mind?
No, I said go ahead, Dave.
Okay. All right. My pick is We Are the Aliens, and this will be very interesting because of something that we talked about last week. It's a 2013 BBC documentary, which basically talks about, for the most part, the theory of panspermia, which is the theory of objects from outer space landing via like a comet or a meteorite. Is it the meteorite that when it hits the ground, when it goes into the atmosphere and hits the ground? Or is that a meteor?
When it hits the ground, it's a meteorite. When
okay.
It only makes it into the atmosphere and burns up before hitting the ground, it's a meteor. And whenever it's floating out in space, it's a meteoroid.
Okay. All right. I will remember that next time. So they actually interview the two people that came up with the concept of panspermia, Fred Hoyle and Chandra Wickramasinghe. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. But they came up with the concept, the theory of panspermia back in the 1960s, and they were basically chastised because of it. Nobody believed them. They thought they were crazy. And the more that time goes by, the more evidence is mounting that that's an actual thing. And one of the other things they touch on in this documentary is we are being seeded by panspermia on a regular basis. It's not just something that happened a long time ago, but this is happening all the time. And one of the things that they mentioned, one of the incidents they mentioned was this thing that happened in India where it was basically raining this blood-red rain, basically. It turns out it was some kind of substance that they couldn't – they put it under a microscope or did whatever they had to do, to look at it, and there was no DNA in this whatever it was, and they determined that it was not from this planet. It was from somewhere else in the universe, the galaxy, whatever, and they thought that that's the best evidence that they've come up with for panspermia. And it was very, very interesting, and I highly recommend that you check it out. The only place I could find it was on YouTube, and I just kind of bumped into it. And I actually had to do my research, like Google, because the name that was on the video on YouTube was not the actual name of the documentary. But it's called We Are the Aliens. It's a 2013 BBC documentary, and they do a really good job of, being funny about it. Not making fun of it, but being funny. And they really break down all these complicated, serious scientific concepts and really put it in language that everybody can understand. So check it out again. It is called We Are the Aliens. And one of the people they had on there was the guy that's in charge of – what was he in charge of? Oh, he's in charge of, our safety from things from above or things from space. And he was talking about how NASA and the U.S. government was so concerned with bacteria and other dangerous substances that the Apollo astronauts may have come in contact with, that I didn't realize how long they were in quarantine, like a week after the first astronauts came back on Apollo 11 from the moon. They were in quarantine for a week.
Yep.
And they talked about that, how we don't want to have reverse panspermia, like how we all the care that we take into protecting our spacecraft that we send to other planets and just into space itself, not just on a planet, but into space itself. So that's another thing that I didn't think about, how we need to protect others' environments from us.
Yeah, like all the Mars lander, the vehicle that actually took the rover Curiosity.
Curiosity.
They build all those in a clean room to make sure that it's, you know, those are as clean as possible and don't pollute the planets that they go to with our bacteria.
And that's what this guy does, the guy from the government, who had, by the way, Starship Enterprise in the background in his office, which was pretty cool. That's what his job is to oversee, like, all these missions going into space to make sure that they're not, that they're testing all their stuff and making sure everything's clean. And if it's not, then he's the person that says, hey, you gotta, you know, go back and clean this or make sure that, you know, redo it so you don't send bacteria into space. Sure.
Wow.
That's my pick.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I just happened to bump into this. I didn't go out to search for this type of documentary. I just typed in YouTube alien documentary, blah, blah, blah. And this is exactly what we talked about last week, and I thought it was kind of a cool coincidence.
Huh.
So
awesome. It was meant to be, Dave.
Yeah.
It was totally meant to be.
Kismet. We'll have the link in the show notes, and you can check it out on the YouTube. Okay. Let's talk about the big pick for the week. It's officially Anessa's pick, but we all saw it. Anessa, what is it?
Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo.
The actual synopsis from IMDb says it's about an officer that finds himself caught in a time loop in a war with an alien race. His skills increase as he faces the same brutal combat scenarios, and his union with a special forces warrior gets him closer and closer to defeating the enemy. So, as other people have described, it's like Groundhog Day on steroids.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's got a very Groundhog Day feel to it, for sure.
Yeah, but no, it's actually a really fun movie to watch. There's a lot of action. There's not really a lot of drag, I guess, in the movie. Like, some movies have a lot of downtime, and this one, it keeps progressing. Like, at first, you're like, oh, okay, like, what's going on? What do you have to say, Brad?
We started talking about this film in episode 31.
Oh, my God. Jeez.
And it was our episode named Then Some Stuff Happened. It was episode 31, and we talked about how Emily Blunt was cast in the film. That was the first bit of information that we had when it was named All You Need Is Kill.
Yep, I remember that. Yeah. And I was confused. I got that movie confused with last year's Tom Cruise science fiction movie, which also involved aliens. So I thought they were both the same movie, but I've seen both.
Surprise!
What was the one from last year?
Oblivion?
Oblivion. Oblivion. Between this and Oblivion, this one was by far the superior movie. I thought it was very fun.
I've not seen Oblivion.
Oh, honey, I own it. You can check it out.
Yeah, it's in the living room.
So.
My massive DVD collection I have.
What do you think, Brad? Which one was your favorite between the two?
Oblivion was designed to be kind of a suspense thriller that was beautiful. Kind of like, I equate it to a science fiction North by Northwest. By the way it was shot, it was very visually
pleasing.
It was meant to give you a view of, boy, what's the best way to describe it? As it was shot, everything was made to make either the characters feel small or to give you a sense of all this space, especially when they do the chase on Mount Rushmore. When you look at Oblivion, everything is like, you know, a lot of the action or more the interpersonal interactions happen on the platform where his character lives and his companion.
It's very first person.
And then when he starts flying out, you see this vast, you know, Earth. So it kind of had that same feel. But with this film, it was meant to be an in-your-face action film. So I think for different reasons, I think that they're both really good films. The first one, Oblivion, kind of gave you that whole sense of space and all this area that he had to patrol and this vast empty earth that he had to deal with, where this film, it was just, you know, everybody was on top of everybody in battle, and it was meant to be more of a confined, you know, claustrophobic sort of a feel, but in the right context.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm giving you a non-answer. I liked them both, liked them both for different reasons.
Yeah, no, I totally respect that. And one of the things that I thought was really cool about this movie is it showed that Tom Cruise still has the comedy acting chops. Because for all its action, for all its, like, killing and violence, there were a lot of funny parts in it.
Yeah.
And he's such a good actor.
For as much as, and this is me personally, I don't want to like him because of Scientology, because of my own personal beliefs, he's a hell of an actor.
Yeah.
There's a certain point in the film where he's just kind of resigned to the fact that there's an event that's going to happen no matter what with the way things are going. And every time that he's tried to get around it, it hasn't happened. And that's when they're at the farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give anything else away as to what happens, but that he's trying to play it off and the other character is really kind of responding to this and going, wait, there's something you're not telling me. And the weight that he gives the next statement that he makes is just, you're like, oh, that's just kind of soul crushing that you've gone over and over and over this particular thing and you can't get past it no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're finally telling this character what the deal is and you're just not going to get past it. And it really felt soul crushing at that moment. And the way he portrayed that and made that emotion just kind of right in your face, you really felt that moment and how horrible he felt about that.
He's a hell of an actor. Anessa, what did you think?
About what in general? Or just the movie
your
in general?
Feelings for the movie.
No, I really enjoyed it. I like that it had a nice flow. There were some parts that, of course, happened you could see coming, but it still kind of gave you a little bit of a, they actually did that sort of feel to it. Particularly, like, on the beach. And I don't think it's really much of a spoiler, honestly, but it's right after they land. Something happens to one of the characters, and like Tom Cruise is also just kind of like, ah, that just happened. But you as a viewer, you can kind of see that coming. And then when it actually happens, you're like, oh, they actually went there. And mm-hmm. then you just keep on moving. And you have to kind of keep track of everything that's going on. But it does it in a way where it's not like tiresome is what I really liked about it. Because even though he was repeating the same situation, it wasn't like watching the same thing over and over and over again. There were different variations. You were seeing what he was thinking and what he was trying to do and what he managed to do or failed to do, mm-hmm. which added variety to the exact same thing going on and on and on. So
the one thing that I was thinking while I was watching this, oddly enough, one of my favorite hero films is Unbreakable. Now, the thing about Unbreakable, when M. Night Shyamalan shot the movie, he went through the extra expense of shooting it chronologically. So normally when you shoot a movie, you go through the pages of the script that are at that particular physical place, and you don't come back to it. So you could be at the beginning of the film, at the middle of the film, at the end of the film, and shoot that on a day that you're at that location or 2 days or whatever. And your character has to be in a different mental place at those three different points in time. So what he decided to do is shoot it 100% chronologically so that the character, the actors didn't have to go through that, and they could kind of discover and feel and have the character grow while the film was being shot. Okay? Does that mm-hmm. make sense?
Yeah.
With the way this movie was done, Tom Cruise's character is growing, obviously, because and you see the change in him throughout the film because he's reliving this day over and over, and he moves from being this kind of snivelly PR guy to what he becomes at the end of the film. But you know that they're shooting these things over and over in this location, but there's an actual change in his mannerisms, in his eyes even. As time goes on, he becomes maybe a little jaded, but definitely more battle-worn. And you can see that. And that's just a really nuanced performance that somebody that's really good can only do as well as Tom Cruise does. So the fact that they keep coming back to this physical place and he's at a different, his character's at a different mental point, or even, you know, maybe even 500 resets.
Yep.
You see that mental progression, and that battle weariness, over time.
I thought the, to start off down a different path is I thought the technology was pretty cool too. The aircraft, the mech suits, and the special effects too were really awesome. I recently saw an article this week about the proposed look of the mechs and the proposed look of the aliens, quite different from how they turned out, but equally good, as good. The way they turned out was awesome as well. So, one more thing I wanted to throw in. I was talking to somebody about this film. They had no idea it came out. So I think this movie flew kind of under the radar for a lot of people. So if you're listening to us and you haven't thought of going to see this movie, I recommend that you see it, because in a summer full of like remakes and sequels, I think this is, for an original film, this is a really good, if you want a good original film, I think you got it in this one.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was really refreshing to see, not just another reboot or remake. And like you said, I think it did fly under a lot of people's radars. I think maybe they just, if they ever saw it, just because it's Tom Cruise, they're like, man, whatever. Because a friend of mine even said that she had never heard of it until a couple of her friends were talking about it. And that was just the other day. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that was a really good movie. You should see it. So the other thing, too, with the aliens, I really liked the way that they did them. They kind of reminded me, if you've ever seen the movie Grabbers, which is a pick that we had on the show not too long ago, about these this town in Ireland that was infested by aliens that have a bunch of tentacles and kind of roll along the ground. The way in which that these aliens moved for some reason reminded me of that film and the aliens in that film.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way that they looked as they were moving around on the sand and popping up through the dirt and whatnot. It just made me really think about Grabbers, which is another good movie if you have Netflix and if it's still there.
All right.
So what were you going to say, Brad?
We've been talking about this since April of 2012.
Okay. That's about time it comes out then. That's like two full years.
But finally,
it's amazing.
It's out and yep. We can move on to something else. But no, I recommend Edge of Tomorrow. It was a really enjoyable movie. It had a lot of action, lots of character development. As Brad said, Tom Cruise's character really grows and like finds out what he's capable of.
Mm-hmm. And I thought it was very
yeah, he was a very weak character. He just PR guy, like, I don't want to get my hands dirty. And then suddenly he's out there fighting this fight that he didn't want in the first place, that he didn't want to participate in. And he basically has to learn that he's got to suck it up and keep trying.
Yeah.
No. All right. There you go. Our three picks. Edge of Tomorrow, We Are the Aliens, and Spooked Episode 2, Mixed Signal. And we'll have the links to all of these in the show notes of the podcast. Before we get out of here, we have some feedback. We were just talking about him last week. Peter from Florida is back with...
Yay!
A voicemail.
Long time no hear.
Yeah, so let's take a listen. I guess he was listening last week. Here we go.
Good evening. This is Peter and Lexi from South Florida. Say hello, Lexi.
Hi.
I think you have your youngest fan here right now. Hey, Lexi, what does a Dalek say?
That's good to me.
Doctor?
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, we just heard your latest podcast. What? You want to say something? What do you want to say? Okay. Say, hello, Galactic Neckpass.
Hello, Galactic Neckpass.
Yeah, close enough. Say, you're doing a good job.
Good job.
Yeah. And if you can't take good comments from a three-year-old, well, you can't take... What? What do you want? Oh, here. Use this. What is that? Push the button. Uh-oh. Are you using the Sonic? Thank you, Lexi. Say bye-bye to everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Say enjoy Galactic Netcasts.
Enjoy Galactic Netcasts.
Okay, use the Sonic. Bye, everybody.
How awesome was that?
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so adorable.
I know.
Yep.
So we finally heard from Lexi. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yay, that's cool. Thank you, Peter.
All right, if you want to leave
Peter
us...
and Lexi.
If you want to leave us a voicemail as well, 805-328-3966. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and subscribe to the show. We've got the link at our website, galacticnetcasts.com. We're also on the iTunes and on Stitcher Smart Radio. Let's get out of here. Final thoughts, Brad. Hello.
Cricket. I'm not ready. Damn it.
We do this every episode.
I know. Hey, look. Hello, Kitty Snacks.
there you go. That's your final thought.
Mm.
Brad, or not Brad. Anessa, what's your final thought?
Hello Kitty, all the things.
Oh my God, you guys are ridiculous. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, Dave.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.